It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And good morning. Welcome to FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward is on assignment this morning. It's all right, because a lot of us want to be on assignment. Got the Mystic Stripers Fishing Rodeo going on today. Weigh in at 5 o'clock. Love to see y'all down at Dolphin Island Marina. I'll be down there for the weigh-in, hopefully weighing in some winning fish, but at least having a good time. That's going on throughout the day today. Like I said, Dolphin Island Marina headquarters and weigh-in starts. Weigh stations close at 5, and more prizes to give away after that. Hey, coming up on the show today, a couple things. Number one, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, joins us. We'll talk some snapper season so far and other issues dealing with the Gulf and some reefs and some of the close reef work that they're doing. We'll get into that. Also coming up on the show, as it is day two of the World Turkey Calling Championships here in Mobile, we'll talk with Kenny Weiss. Actually, a conversation I had with Kenny Weiss on Friday. So yesterday's show, on the morning show that I do, I got a conversation with Kenny. We're going to go to that right now, get that interview from yesterday morning, let you hear more about it, and hopefully you'll be able to get down there today and check out some of the best turkey callers on the planet, in the universe. And, you know, there are turkeys other places. But here stateside, the best ones, I think 12, 13 states represented in this calling contest. Hopefully you can get down there today. So this is a conversation I had yesterday on Mobile Mornings, talking about the World Turkey Calling Championship. And then we'll come back and we'll get into some fishing talk and talk to Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. All right, 8:07, FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings, glad to have you here on this Friday. Talking about all the things going on this weekend for Father's Day. It's coming up on Sunday. Of course, I don't know if we get a Father's Day. You know, you get a Mother's Day weekend. Yeah. It's an extended celebration of moms, which it should be. Dads, we hope to get the majority of Sunday. We get the afternoon, the morning, or something like that, mm-hmm. right? But maybe you can use those points to get the kids to go with you, do something with dad. And one of the things that maybe, if you're a youngster, you haven't seen right here in your hometown something that started here and has come back home, the World Championship Turkey Calling Contest coming to the Mobile Convention Center. And Kenny Weiss joins us to talk more about this. And Kenny, good morning, and talk about what's coming up today.
Well, today starting around, really at 3 o'clock, Mayor Stimson, he's going to come in and do some opening remarks, and then we are going to go right after he finishes. We're going right into the World Friction Turkey Calling Championship, and then follow that's the prelims. And then the next, right after that, will be the prelims for the World Championship Turkey Calling Contest.
Now, this is, I mean, what people understand, let's like try to compare it to sports they understand. I mean, this is not just the SEC championship. This is the national title. This is the Super Bowl when it comes
now,
to turkey calling.
This is the world title.
So it's even beyond, so we have nothing in sport. This is like the World Cup in soccer, except everybody actually pays attention to this one.
Correct. Most definitely. This contest started in Mobile back in 1940, January the 4th of 1940. And they actually brought a caged gobbler into the Battle House Motel. And, you know,
I love it.
They had to do a minimum of five calls. Now, the calling has progressed a lot. Keep in mind, this was the first contest ever held. And it was titled the World Championship Turkey Calling Contest. And so some of Mobile's elite, you know, was down there, and a man named Fred Stimson actually won the first world championship, and that there is Mayor Sandy Stimson's grandfather.
Funny how all that comes. You got 1940s to 2019. And you've got the same family involved in this. That's a good thing.
That's right, man, and we're proud of that, you know, and real proud to bring it back home.
Yeah, this was
away from here for a while, you know, but we're gonna try to keep it here this time.
That's what I want to get into. So this was, I remember as a child for sure, and maybe on into my teenage years. This was here in Mobile. Then it went away. And it's a big deal to get it back, and let's keep it here because this is brings a lot of people to our area. We talk about different tourism things, and people think tourism's always the beach or fishing or those kind of things, which are great. But this is another thing that brings people to the Mobile area from out of state. How many different states are represented by callers?
As of right now, it's either 15 or 16 different states that's represented. And there's multiple, people. I mean, people bringing their families here. They putting, of course, they got to have a place to stay and a place to eat, you know. So it's boosting some of Mobile's economy off this contest also.
You know, those of us that remember the contest or have been to others know what to expect. But, Kenny, let's talk to somebody who's never been to one of these at all and is thinking about coming down today or tomorrow. Tell them kind of what to expect. How does it work?
Well, we'll have some judges, and we got an elite panel of judges, a panel of judges that's never been assembled. This is the greatest panel that's ever been assembled. But they'll be behind a curtain. Actually, underneath the curtain, and the call they are required to do, we'll have an MC that will be calling out calls, and so the judges don't know what caller's out there. All they know is caller number one, caller number two, caller number three. But whenever caller number one gets up there, he's asked to do the calls. When he's finished, caller number two comes up there. He's asked to do the same calls, and it progresses right on through all the callers. And then your high and low scores are thrown out, and kind of like the Olympics. And, you know, you add the remaining scores together, and whoever's got the highest score, you know, is he wins, you know. He or she. I got to point that out.
Mm-hmm.
He or she,
that's,
you know,
right,
wins. And but what we're doing at this contest, we are looking for the world's greatest. You know, other contests like the Grand Nationals, you know, you had this age specific and stuff. This here is open from 0 to 100 years of age. I mean, or past, if you 150 years of age, you can call.
Now, this is so today, if people, and I want to get back into some of the other calls here, but today, doors open when?
The doors are going to open at 12.
Okay.
But now the calling won't start till Mayor Stimson should be there around 3 o'clock.
Okay.
After he finishes, that's when it gets down to business. And we'll have the friction prelims first, and then we'll have the open prelims after the friction. And friction, you have to use a friction call. You know,
explain that to folks, what a friction call is that don't turkey hunt.
What it is you have to use something that you rub together. I mean, to cause friction to produce the call that is being asked of you. Now, in the open, you can either use friction, air, wing bone, trumpet call. I mean, you could use a bicycle in or two as long as you can make it sound like a turkey.
And that's one thing people are going to be, if they've never seen this, y'all are going to hear an amazing display of calling. I mean, there's a bit at this level, a musical art to what's happening. It's not just the day in and day out grind of making calls to try to kill a turkey. These people are, I don't know, to stay with the music, they're virtuosos of a turkey call.
Correct. It's unbelievable what can be produced. I mean, and we are listening for the perfect turkey. And what we're doing, we are not trying to call a turkey. We are trying to mimic that turkey. We are trying to paint the picture. We're trying to put feathers on that call when we're trying to produce it.
Well, yeah, there's people that are partially turkey. You're partially turkey. You have a son that's almost completely turkey. I don't know how much human genetics
sometimes,
he has.
Sometimes I wonder if he was hatched instead of born, you know?
You know, because you're half turkey, and I got to say your son is way more than half turkey. All right, so that's Friday. And then Saturday, when do we wrap up with the event?
Well, we'll start out in the morning with little fellas, 10 and under. And then we'll go to the juniors, which is 11 to 15. Then from the intermediate is 16 through 20. And then we have an amateur division. It's not too late to sign up. If you think you're good enough, come on down. I mean, we got a division for everybody that we can possibly think of. Then it steps up to the owling division. We'll go into the gobbling division. And then in the afternoon, it's going to be, you know, the friction finals. Then team calling. Now, if you want to see some excitement, you come to the team calling. That there is where two men get there and are asked to do a scenario. They're actually going to be doing two different scenarios. And they actually paint the picture of whatever that scenario is that's asked of them. And they working together. You know, they got to be in. I mean, it's truly a fun. That's actually the more you, for an audience, that's the more in entertainment right there. But then we get to the final contest, and that's the world championship. And that should
happen about what time?
With the amount of callers that we got, now the prelims are going to cut these callers back to 12. So we'll have 12, you know, in the finals. So I'm guessing probably around 4 is when it would start, 4 to 5 o'clock probably when it starts. It just depends on how fast the other divisions go, because we might have a call off, you know, for first place or second place or whatever in those other divisions. And these callers are going for money. I mean, when they are on stage, they are it's serious. It's serious business when they on stage.
And they're going for money here, but also, I mean, this is like any, you think like a golfer or something. We were just talking in sports earlier, what's happening in Pebble Beach. If they win here, the contracts and sponsorships come rolling in.
That's right. Correct. And I mean, this is a big deal. There's a lot of these callers, they actually coming in. They don't care about this trophy. They don't care about the money. On this contest, all the callers are looking to be world champion, because once you get that title, it opens up a big future for you.
It's a big
Eddie
deal.
Salter, Preston Pittman, Steve Stokes, Don Shipp. They made careers out of it after they won the world championship.
Well said. Well said. All right. Today, tomorrow, at the convention center, and it is free for us to come check this out.
Correct. Free to the public, and folks, we need to get behind it. Just if y'all would come down there and, I mean, let's show them some old Southern Mobile hospitality. These callers, they like to perform in front of people. So let's get out there and support it.
Great stuff. Kenny, as always, man, I appreciate your time, and we'll see you down there this weekend.
Yeah, man. Come on down.
All right.
We'll see you now.
All right. See you then. Kenny Weiss with the World Championship Turkey Calling Contest, something that started right here in Mobile and has come home after all these years, and started by the mayor's grandfather. And he's going to be starting the invocation today.
What an amazing story.
That's pretty awesome. Cool stuff. That's, they have that hashtag online, SoMobile. That's SoMobile. What a cool story and a great event going on today. So hopefully you'll get down there today, too, of the World Turkey Calling Championships at the Convention Center. When we come back, we're checking in with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along on this Saturday. Mike Ward on assignment. That assignment, probably the same assignment I'm going to be taking on today, too. Chasing Snapper here in weekend three of Alabama's snapper season. Talk more about that. Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, joining us now. Thanks for being on.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
And I want to talk, before we even get into some of the broader scope conversations. You and I were talking yesterday. You were there on the east end of Dolphin Island doing a count. Not a fish count as much as your first count was a trucks and trailers count.
Absolutely. I came down. It was before 8 o'clock, around 7 o'clock in the morning, and you know, just trying to look at the effort because it was a little breezy on Friday and potentially maybe breezy the rest of this weekend. Want to see, you know, are people going fishing? And they were. At 7 o'clock this morning, there were about just shy of 80 trailers from Billy Goat Hole, and then about 40 at Little Billy Goat Hole. And our chief of enforcement, Jason Downey, was over in Perdido Pass watching the steady stream of boats head out. So even though there's a little bit of wind chop, people are still taking advantage of the opportunity to go fishing on this weekend. I do wish the weather was a little bit better because some of those smaller boats may not get an opportunity to go. But if you're willing to take a little salt spray, that they were able to catch fish.
Well, last weekend, people took a beating last weekend.
Yes, and last weekend, our numbers show that a relatively small portion of people went, and I'm thankful of that. I don't want people to feel like they have to go when that weather is bad like that. It would not have been safe for a lot of people. I did see a video of a pontoon boat with 13 people around in Fort Morgan that panicked me, but luckily, the person who took the video stood by just in case, and they were in a much bigger boat and went on offshore. But and that's the advantage of the state managing the system is we're looking at this. So the first weekend was fantastic, great weather, great numbers. People got to go fish. You know, the current was a little rough for some people to try and stay on top of some of the reefs, but people got to catch a lot of great fish. Second weekend was kind of a bust. This one is somewhere in the middle. And so we'll see what the averages look like toward the middle of the season and what we potentially can do at the end. Or I feel pretty good with the numbers now that, you know, we're going to get it through the days that we have allotted. The 27 days is probably not going to be a problem.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, but it's worth reiterating, I believe, that this is all part of this information is important. And we talk to people why, because it seems counterintuitive reporting. Through the Snap app, people will say, oh, man, I'm going to, you know, if I report, then they're going to say, well, they, you know, you're catching more fish and they're going to end the season early. But that's not how it works. It's explain it to folks why reporting the fish we catch is important. And what you just laid out about not as much participation last weekend and maybe this weekend.
Sure. It's critical for us to have real information. You and I talk about this almost every time that real numbers work to your advantage. Whenever you're doing an estimate, it's never valued in your favor. It's valued on the side to protect the resource or whatever. So the more numbers that we can validate, and so one of the challenges we have with Snapper Check is that some people forget that they have to do it as soon as they land those fish. So we encourage people with the offline function, do it while you're offshore or while you're coming in. When your phone gets a signal, it'll upload. And then when our staff surveys you at the ramp, we use that as a validation. And some people are not reporting in a timely manner, and that will show up in the system as a non-compliant, even though they did report. And I do go back and look at that. But generally, we were at about 40%, which is about where we ended the season last year. I would like to be much higher because the real numbers work to your favor, and we can potentially – you know, add days, or we may subtract days on harvest. If people are having fantastic weather and weekends like we had last year, that's to our benefit. But if we have these bad weather days, if I have more accurate information, I'm willing to push those numbers, but we have a buffer built in, and if we don't have enough fish left at the end to have a weekend, then I can't do it. But if the real numbers are in there, and I'm confident in that reporting rate, then you know we can add days, we can manage that season to the advantage of the angler in Alabama.
Yeah, and that's the thing to explain to folks. So when it was under federal management, the assumption in this the math problem was overly simplistic, which hurt Alabama anglers. They would assume what, that there were this many, no matter what the weather was, you know, they'd figure out, okay, this many anglers and this amount of participation. So every day that it's open, this many people go out and catch this many fish. And that's how we would finish season so quickly.
Sure. Yeah. As a simple view, that's how it goes. But now, you know, we see the numbers. We know that the first weekend was a great weekend. We know that the second weekend was relatively low, but some people did go. So that is valuable information in managing the season and determining the effort. And generally, you'll see the effort start to lay down a little bit as the season goes on. People say, "Hey, you know what? I don't need to go if the weather is bad. I've already been a couple of times." And again, I want people to be safe at the end of the day under the federal season. If we'd have had that again this year, I think we'd have been in single-digit days, and people would have definitely gone on days that would not be safe.
That's for sure. Okay, so you feel that, obviously, there are things that can change. I'm semi-trying to put you on the spot, but you think we make it with these weekend seasons through the end of July?
Based on the effort we're seeing right now, this is going to be the third weekend. I think it'll be a moderate weekend to a high weekend. But yes, based on the big first weekend numbers, we would probably still make it because again, you're going to have some weather anomalies. But this showed more consistent with historic weather. Is that like every other weekend, it's going to blow. It's mm-hmm. in South Alabama. That's what happens.
Now, that's for sure. Just joining us, talking to Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, and talking about snapper season so far. But I want to get into a couple other things here. Number one, the places we're fishing. Okay, the reefs we're fishing, and the state is y'all moved to bring a lot more structure in close. You know, when we were dealing with just the early days of just the state season, just within 9 miles, y'all were putting structure in there. How is that structure faring? How are people using that more? Are they going out more? What are you seeing?
So what we're seeing right now is that people are fishing very close to shore. We did develop some reef zones within that 9 mile area. They may be catching a few fish on them now, maybe some small fish, because they've only been out there for this year. Probably by next year, you'll start to see fish show up on those. I will admit, with these limited seasons, amberjack and triggerfish not being in, people are not venturing out to the further spots where they would go to, say, target amberjack or things. So most people are fishing very close to shore, and we understand that. We understand that it'll also start to be a little bit of a struggle, especially as the season progresses. So on the good days, maybe they'll go ahead and fish a little further out. But once these inshore reefs start to develop, that'll help spread some of the pressure a little bit that's close to shore. But outside of that, probably about the 20-mile mark, about 90-plus percent of our anglers fish within about 20 to 25 miles. So outside of that, the number of fish is still phenomenal. The opportunities are still great. So we don't feel like it's going to get, quote, fished out. And I know some people have that concern when they generally fish closer, that spots have been hit pretty hard. And they have, or they will. But in the big reef zone picture, there are still plenty of fish out there.
Yeah, well, what about the science behind that? We talk about that area. You go a little further out, and fewer anglers falls off after 20, 25 miles, 30 miles. Does that area, and may not use the right term, but does that area restock the stuff closer in?
It does. The fish move in very limited circles, but it's just like anything else. They like to move out on some pressure, so to speak. The area gets crowded. They have a tendency to kind of circle their area, and then they find a place that they call home. I tell everybody they're nosy, you know, and they get around and say, "Hey, this seems like a pretty good place." So, yes, the rest of that reef zone, I call it the bank account, it's there to replenish the inshore. Maybe not always at the rate that we would like to see, but with our research that we do through the Dauphin Island Sea Lab, the information that we get, the video and the counts and things, we're pretty confident in what our reef zone holds. and what it is capable of handling as far as fishing efforts. So I think we're in a pretty good balance, and you know, we feel pretty good about some of the trigger fish and amberjack numbers. I would like to see some changes in that. We're working on that from the Gulf Council side, because those are hot topics for us here in Alabama.
I would say, this is an unscientific term, but at least the places I fish, and I'm talking about even some of my close stuff, the trigger fish numbers are stupid.
That's a technical term that I use. Yes. Some of the science guys look at me funny, but that's okay.
I mean, they're and not just numbers.
Stop.
You know, because we're fishing circle hooks for snapper, and we're fishing these bigger hooks. And when you routinely catch, when you routinely catch triggers on big circle hooks like that, that's telling you something.
Yes, and so that's the advantage of moving to the state system with the red snapper, and eventually I would like to get to where we manage the number. We're still issued the allocation from the federal government. I still have it on my radar. I've never said anything otherwise, but I think more refish need to be added into that state-managed system because we have very good information on what's out there. We know how the anglers fish here in Alabama, and it is different from state to state. It's very interesting to hear the way people fish in different places and what their favorites are. And snapper has just become like the celebrity of fishing, and because we have an abundance of them, and they're easy to target. But there are other species that we would really like to see have a little bit longer season.
Well, that's the key. I think my desire as a recreational angler is to get to the point. Well, I've got some big. Let's say my short term or my small focus would be to have a situation where y'all with the state could manage it to where when I fill up the 98 gallons there on the Kenner. Right, and I go out that we go out and catch our snapper, and we can also catch some triggerfish and maybe amberjack. I mean, if we're going to fill up and go out, and that also, like you said, would spread the pressure because I'm going to have to go further out to catch amberjack.
And I think most people feel that way, you know, that's what they would like. And right now, the way the rules are set up, it is difficult to make that happen. There's some lines of thinking to make some opportunity available at different times of the year, and then there's some effort that would say, hey, we would rather just have a multi-species trip. And so there's some balance required in that, and also some science behind spawning seasons and things like that. But I think as we move forward, I think we'll start to bring some of this together. It's a slow process. We're moving at the speed of government, and everyone knows what that is. But
let's talk about one other component here as we talk about fish and reef fish, and that is that, and correct my nomenclature if I don't have the reef fish permit or stamp.
The reef fish endorsement.
Endorsement. And why is that? Okay, explain it, and then why we call it an endorsement.
Sure. Because it's we call it an endorsement because you're already buying a fishing license. And so then we do a tremendous amount of research in the Alabama Reef Zone, and we are now under a state-managed plan. The funding that we were receiving to do that research is coming to an end this year. So we have to fill the gap, so to speak. We have a great program. We're changing some of that research to make sure that we're getting the best bang for the buck, that we're spending the citizens' money wisely. But we need some funding to continue that research, to count those fish, get the videos, get the information that we have in the reef zone. So to do that, you don't want to raise the license, and people that never go reef fishing should not be obligated to help fund that research. But people who participate in it, should have a little ownership in that, and we wanted to make it as minimal as possible. So it's $10 for the private angler, and it includes anyone, even if you're over the age of 65, if you have a lifetime license, if you have a disability license, or just a regular private angler license. The only group it does not include is those under 16. We've never targeted that group for licensing or fees, and then that money is used specifically for refish research or management for that. And it's also applied to our charter for hire vessels and our commercial fishing vessels because they all participate in that fishery. And it also helps us identify who is participating in that. Right now, some of our survey stuff is based on saltwater fishing license. And there are people that don't ever go fishing for reef fish. So we don't need to survey them. Their answers are zeros or no, mm-hmm. or no response. So now we can target the audience that is specifically going out there to fish, refish, and we can ask them questions and hopefully get better socioeconomic data, data about how they like to fish, how many times they get to go fishing, and it helps us develop that management plan.
Hey, one other question here, and we're running short on time, but this brings up, we talked about it, I've talked about it with Chuck Sykes a bunch on the baiting stamp, the bait stamp, that helps, you know, the state show more, air quotes here, licenses or endorsements, that then lets them, you know, petition for more Pittman Robertson money. Does this do the same thing on the fishing license side to get federal money back?
There is a little bit of that could apply, that we could show that there's a group that is now participating in the fishery that we may not have shown before. Probably won't be a big increase, but yes, any ability we have to show who's participating in that fishery allows us to target those federal dollars.
All right, so here we go. You're feeling right now, as it stands, pretty good that if we're going to be fishing in July.
Yes, and if our reporting rate's around 40%, I would love to see that around, I don't know, hover around 100%, and it would make me happy. But and just remind folks that enforcement is out there checking, and a few people got a written reminder.
Yeah, that's right. So you got to report. And when would the reef, when the endorsement?
We'll start with the next license year. So in September 1st is the change for private angler recreational licenses, and then the commercial and for hire will change October 1st, and that's when the reef fish endorsement will be available.
All right, very good. Thank you for your time. Thanks for checking in, and we'll see you out there.
All right, have a great weekend.
All right, you too. Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, joining us. Coming back, we'll switch gears to the Sweetwater, and Captain Wayne Miller has been crushing the bass in the Mobile Tensaw Delta. He's going to tell us how and where when we return. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Big thank you to Director Scott Bannon, talking snapper weekend number 3 and where we are on those numbers, and we'll keep you up to date throughout the season. Although I don't know what the Fed's total allowable catch, guy doesn't keep, but he catches a high volume, a tonnage of bass. That's our buddy Captain Wayne Miller checking in, talking about some Delta fishing. Hey, Captain Wayne.
Good morning. How you doing, Sean?
I'm good. So the Fed's got onto your case for the number of bass that you put a hole in their top lip or bottom lip?
No, haven't gotten on to me yet, buddy. I'm trying to keep a low profile.
Well, we're going to out you right here because, I mean, you've had it's been a great year of fishing. You're always out there and on fish, but my gosh, the last few weeks have been something.
Yeah, it really have. You know, I mean, I know I've sent you quite a few pictures, and you know, the Delta, we're really, you know, reaping the rewards from all the high water we had. You know, I mean, it's painful to go through it in the spring, but man, when we have these extended periods of high water, these fish get in such great shape that, you know, now, the fish that we're catching out in the main rivers, because most people have transitioned to, you know, the summer patterns, and, you know, with the water levels down, you know, we're seeing good catches, you know, the upper, middle, and lower Delta. But, you know, out in the main rivers, I mean, the fish that we're catching, Sean, are just really in fantastic shape. I mean, it's good to see that on the Delta.
Now, you talk about the shape of these fish in the high water. And folks that don't study this like you do, that's because, what, they have more food availability? What makes it work?
Yeah, I mean, you know, even though we're really depressed when all that we have these flooded conditions, I mean, it's just you know, it's like a buffet, a smorgasbord for the fish, because they get into these big crawfish flats, all these cypress flats, and yeah, I mean, all they do is eat. I mean, it's just fantastic for them. So you know, when that water drops back down, you know, it's multifaceted in that, you know, the fish have had the opportunity to feed and really get bulked up, you know, in great shape. And not only that, they hadn't had pressure. I mean, you know, they hadn't had people throwing baits at them, you know, every day 7 days a week. So,
right.
You know, that helps.
Now, what are you catching them on right now? What are you throwing this time of year?
Well, you know, Sean, it's really been crazy this past week. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to get out any, but we've had this, incoming tide most of the day, and then, you know, the water turns around. We've had this outgoing tide in the afternoon. And, man, the tide has really been strong in the afternoon. I mean, the water's really been ripping. And, we're going to see that coming in, this coming week. I mean, we got a full moon on Monday. And, man, if you look at those tides for next week, the afternoons, we're going to have some ripping tides. Now, what that has meant for us out on these main river patterns is, I've been catching a lot of fish on top water, early and late in the day, small buzz baits, and trick worms, and some, bigger walking baits that I like to fish, but the water really hadn't gotten hot enough for that yet. But, then the spinner baits and crank baits on up in the day, and the plastic worms and lizards,
mm-hmm.
I've been throwing that lizard, my buddy Rick Haney calls me the lizard king, and I have to pick that thing up. It just produces fish year round here on the Delta.
Now, okay, so you talk about the Delta too. How do you break it down this time of year? You talk about the tide fluctuation. When you have a big tide, are you going to try to fish a bigger flat where it's spread out, that volume of tide? Or are you going to fish a narrow creek? I mean, how do you deal with the different points? Because it's going to be faster at some points in the afternoon when it's falling than others.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it's really been strong. So, one thing I would encourage people to do, anybody that, hadn't spent a lot of time on the Delta and they're just now starting to venture out and do some fishing, you really have to be, it changes from day to day. This is really even though it's a phenomenal fishery, it's really hard to pattern fish because of all the changes that we have from day to day with the tide cycles, the prevailing winds. What I've seen is, as we have the incoming tide and that water's puffed up, the water obviously is higher on the, in the main creeks and on the main rivers. I've been able to catch a lot of fish on spinnerbait and crankbait. Now, as those fish, as that tide, starts to get weak during the day when you get to that high tide point, they're not near as active. And, most veteran fishermen will tell you, at that point, you can continue to try to catch them on those moving baits. But most of the time, you'll have better luck if you slow down and throw some plastic. That's where the lizard and the creature baits come into play. And, we've had, during the day, there's been a few days this week where it got pretty tough. But, we've been able to beat out some pretty good fish on soft plastic, especially lizards.
Now, what part of that, like right now, I know you fish all over, so this is not a fair question, but what southern, middle, or northern Delta, what's your main focus?
Right now, I've been primarily staying in the middle. And, on the main rivers, I'm still running down south, though, Sean, and fishing some of the creeks down there. And surprisingly, man, even the creeks that, have what you would not consider really deep, deep water. But, with the phenomenal increase in grass that we've seen down there, vegetation, seeing a lot of fish that are staying in those creeks. I mean, the creeks that have 6 to 8 feet of water in them,
mm-hmm.
they're still loaded with fish. And, I've been going down there catching a tremendous number of fish on trick worms and spinner baits. But then I transitioned, up into the middle Delta and the main rivers during the day. And, I've been doing really well over on the Tensaw and on the Mobile. So, we're seeing seeing a good river bite all over.
Now, you mentioned twice now, and y'all, this is him trying to call me out. Captain Wayne and I have known each other a long time. You've said trick worm twice. You know I love throwing a trick worm. So let's talk about, number one, for somebody who hadn't fished one, what is a trick worm, and how you rigging it, how you fishing it?
Yeah, well, you know, on the trick worms, Sean, I love to throw one. I throw it with an egg beater, man. A lot of guys down here, they just can't, you know, the hardcore bass fishermen, they don't like a spinning rod, a spinning reel. But, man, they're fantastic for throwing trick worms. For that particular technique, they're hard to beat. But, you know, I throw it. I use 20-pound braid on that spinning rod. And the reason I do that is with the braid, you know, it's 6-pound diameter. It's like 6-pound diameter, you know, monofilament. So it's extremely small. And then I'm going to a leader, obviously, you know, and I use a fluorocarbon leader on it. But, you know, the advantage to that is you totally eliminate line twist. So a lot of people that grew up trying to throw a spinning reel and got so frustrated with it, you know, if they would try it with this light braid, it makes a big difference. But basically what I do on the trick worm is I run that 20-pound braid to an extremely small swivel. And then I come off the swivel, obviously, to the bait with a leader of, you know, anywhere from 6 to 12 inches of fluorocarbon, 15-pound fluorocarbon. And, you know, basically a trick worm is just a straight worm. And you'll see there's just a myriad of colors that they sell them in. But, you know, the really bright colors, you've got yellow. I call it school bus yellow. You've got methylate, which is a red color.
It's like a blaze white. Orange almost, that methylate. Yeah,
yeah, it really is. But, you know, I mean, all these bright colors are really good. They work extremely well. And basically what you're doing is, you know, you just cast these worms up on that grass, like down on the south end, and you know, just work it off that grass and twitch it. And it actually, you know, if you rig it, you know, with an EWG, you know, hook, you know, embedded rig, kind of Texas rig,
right?
You know, as you twitch a bait, it'll actually walk the dog. Well, you know, a lot of times they'll come up and hit it on top, but sometimes you have to work it slow. And the great thing about a trick worm is you don't lose that action when it sinks. As you twitch the rod tip, you'll actually see it underwater, and that's the advantage to these real bright color, you know, trick worms. You'll actually see it still walking the dog under the, you know, underwater. So, you know, it's a really great bait. Just, you know, it kind of drives them crazy, to be honest with you, and but it's fun to fish because, especially in the clearer water that you have down in those creeks right now, and even up in the middle belt, I mean, this thing works around cypress trees. It's just a great tool to use. But, you know, the neat thing about it is you're working it as you're twitching it, and you see that thing, you can see the, you know, the yellow one or whichever one you're throwing. And then all of a sudden, a lot of times, it just disappears.
Yep. And that's what you, I mean, and you, obviously, when you're doing that, you got to watch your line. But like you're saying, just twitching it, and all of a sudden, that methylate or white or yellow disappears, and it's time to take up some slack and set a hook.
Yeah, it really is. So, you know, I mean, it's a really fun, you know, a visual presentation that, you know, is a lot of fun to fish, and it's real productive. So, you know, but there again, you know, a lot of people are hesitant to go to spinning equipment. But what you'll find on a light, you know, lure like that, because you basically have no weight, you know, you just got the weight of that little 6 or 8 inch worm. So it really helps to have a spinning rod and reel, because, you know, it enables you to throw it a lot further. And you can skip these things, man. I mean, you know, and you can get really proficient at it. And it's something that I enjoy doing. You know, we don't have many boat docks around here, but as you move up the state, a lot of the lakes up there, you know, that's one of the primary techniques, you know, people use, you know, is skipping those, you know, trick worms, and even rigging them wacky style, you know, skipping them underneath those boat docks. But you can do the same thing with overhanging brush and up around cypress trees, and the ability to skip it really is, you know, it's a fantastic help as far as catching additional fish that most people aren't able to cast to.
That's for sure, and we'll talk about that more coming up on shows to come. Tell folks how they can get a trip booked with you.
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
Captain Wayne, thank you, man. Get back to it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Sean, have a great one.